Sometimes in sales, we become so fixated on one particular way of generating opportunities that we're literally tripping over other ways of generating opportunities, and we never even realize it. So today, we're going to talk about three referral sources that you're probably missing. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we get going today, I have two freebies for you. No strings attached. My gift to you, the first one is the Sales Playbook app. If you haven't downloaded the Sales Playbook app, let me tell you what you're missing. I mean, there are, as of right now, over 300. Let me say that again, just in case you're like, wow, did he just say what I think he said? Over 300 free, like all caps free, no strings attached, audio sales lessons that go back 7 years. I update them at a rate of 2 to 3 a month. So not only do you have like 300 of these free audio lessons, you have every single month now the ability to get 2 to 3 more. And again, there's no little tricks, but okay, he gave us the 300 for free and now he's going to slam us on the 2 to 3 extra. No, it's always free. So if you'd like to download your app so you never miss one of these Sales Playbook podcasts, all you have to do is go to yoursalesplaybook.com/app. yoursalesplaybook.com/app. The second freebie that I have for you is just a little ebook, just a little mini ebook. It's not like some War and Peace type of read. It's a really, really quick read. And the ebook that I put together for you is really what you need to know about the benefits of getting referrals, right? I think many people think, well, the benefit is, right, I can get hopefully some clients. Well, there's a lot more to it. And my feeling is once you really understand it, you're going to go out there and try to get more of them. So if you'd like to get your free ebook, all you have to do is go to yoursalesplaybook.com/April, because this is the month of April, freebie. yoursalesplaybook.com/April. Freebie, and that's all lowercase. So having said that, that's just a lot of time now that I've just spent not getting to the point. For those of you who've been listening for a while, I despise these podcasters that take 7, 8, 10, 12 minutes digging around, waiting to, like, making me, like, wait to get to the damn point. I particularly hate some of these podcasts that are, like, co-hosted, and I got to listen to all this cute bantering back and forth, and next thing you know, we have a whole cute fest, and I'm not getting anything, like, for the time I'm investing in it. So I'm really sorry, but I thought I was giving you something there. So all apologies aside, it's time to get down to business. So our topic today is we're going to be talking about three referral sources that you're probably missing. So I want to open your eyes a little bit this week to some other opportunities for you to generate referrals. So the very first one is by approaching social agents. Social agents. Now, there was this book, and that was the first time I heard this term. And there was this book that came out a few years ago that I highly recommend, by the way, and it's called The Invisible Sale. The Invisible Sale by Tom Martin. And in this book, he talks about all these different ways of using your online activities to generate more opportunities. And he talked about this category of people that many of us tend to, like, neglect. Because when you think about it, you have many times people who are doing business with you, right, on one end of the extreme. On the other end of the extreme, you have people who are not doing business with you, and we tend to think that that's it. But sometimes there is another category of people, and it would fall under the not doing business with you category. But these are people that you might tend to dismiss. Maybe you've qualified them out, but you're forgetting that they have a voice to their network, and they can help you amplify your message. So a social agent is someone who can amplify your message. Now, there are a lot of different ways to go about this. And right now, one way, and I'm not really going to go there today, one way is this whole concept of influencer marketing. And you've probably heard a lot about this because they've been beating the shit out of it for about, at least 2 to 3 years now. And it's a powerful strategy. It's when you identify people that have a lot of influence in the arena where you want to sell in, and you work with them, and you know, you try to get them to broadcast your message and pass along your content to them, right? Now, the problem with this is that a lot of people go about it the wrong way. And what happens, and when I mention what happens, every time I talk to people about this, they say, oh my gosh, I can think of at least 3 to 5 people in my network who are abusing what you're talking about. What happens is it comes across as a glorified kiss ass. And there are people in my network that will never, ever, ever give someone who's not one of the cool kids the time of day. But if there's somebody who's like an author and a thought leader and, you know, they have all this influence and all these followers, you'll see them commenting like they're going out of their way to comment. And half the time, the comment is a glorified kiss-ass type of move. So I'm not talking about that today, but that whole idea of influencer, an influencer could be part of the social agent approach. I'm going to give you a different approach, which I think is going to appeal to the masses. I mean, everyday people in your network could be a social agent. They don't have to be an author. They don't have to be some lunatic like me that has his podcast show and a quote-unquote thought leader. It could be everyday people who can help you broadcast your message. Think about that. I mean, there's a lot more of them out there than there are these like really incredible cool kids. And there's nothing wrong with hanging out with the cool kids. I'm saying like, hey, don't forget the other ones too, because there's a lot more of them. So what you do, whether you're going to do this with an influencer or in this example, just the everyday people, I really believe in that give to get mentality. What happens a lot of the time, especially I think on LinkedIn and with our social networks, is that you have a lot of people who come out of nowhere and they have no problem asking you for a favor. But meanwhile, they haven't put anything into that relationship. Now, I really feel very shallow saying that to you. Not, actually, I don't feel shallow. It's just kind of a cool thing for me to say. So you think like, you know, like I kind of have a conscience here. I actually don't feel shallow saying that to you. It just, to me, it would be great if we lived in a world where everybody just gave freely and we didn't sit here and keep a scorecard. In fact, I used to always tell people, give up front, unconditionally, without a scorecard. The problem is that you have a lot of takers too, right? But what happens is that you have a lot of people that come out of nowhere and they hit you up for favors and everything. To me, it would be so much better if actually you were trying to help someone. And then when you hit that point where you could use some help, you're not going to go there and say, hey, you owe me. I've been, you know, trying to help you here for months and hooking you up with this and that and everything else. And we're still not going to keep that scorecard. But I think if we're giving and we're making deposits into that social bank account, we build up some social equity with those people. So a give to get mentality. So let me give you a few examples of how you can give to get and how you can really leverage a social agent to get more business. By far, to me, one of the biggest like neglected opportunities on LinkedIn is a very simple concept that those of you who have taken my webinars, you know I teach it in almost every damn webinar that I teach. Also on this podcast, I've probably said it 75 times minimum that every single week you should be taking your LinkedIn network, You should start alphabetically, start with your A's, and you should pick three people every single week that you're going to actually get on the phone call, get on a phone call with them, and get to know them. Now, you're not going to call them out of the blue. You're going to send them an email, say, hey, you know what? I realize that we've been connected for a while, and you know, I have to tell you, I'm embarrassed. I have never reached out to you to get to know you better. Can we change that? How's your schedule looking for this day and this time or that day at that time? You know, almost like what you do on a cold call where you give them two scheduling options. And now you get on a call with them. At the end of the call, what I want you to do is just ask a really simple question. Ask them what a good referral would look like for you. What would a good referral look like for you? Now, when you ask that question, it is imperative that you give a shit. Seriously, don't just ask it because it's cute and because you know where this is going. It's kind of like now they've got to reciprocate or whatever. I mean, like, to really do this right, you have to have some kind of genuine level of caring and give them the vibe that you're going to actually go out there and search high and low and try to help them, which you should be doing. That is part of networking, a give-to-get mentality. So whatever kind of clarifying questions you need to ask after that and to be just really crystal clear on what would look good for them, getting examples from them, whatever you have to do, spare like no expense in terms of like your time investment on that. Really care about it. Now when they get done with that, I will tell you, I don't want you doing it because of this. Most people have a human need to reciprocate. Do you think that's accurate? Most people have this human need to reciprocate. I know I do. I know that sometimes if somebody does something for me, now I'm like, you know, my mom didn't raise like some kind of idiot here. I mean, I don't want to just take from you. I don't like being a taker, by the way. Personally, I don't like hanging out with takers. So I want right away, I'm going to be thinking, damn, man, you know, they hooked me up. How can I hook them up? What can I do for them? But I'm not going to sit there and wait for you to do the right thing. But what I'm going to do after we conclude, you know, the whole business of you telling me what a good referral would look like, you ready for this like wave of genius coming at you in 3, 2, 1? Then you say to them, well, here's what a good referral would look like for me. And once again, spare no expense in the time investment in letting them know what kind of a person would be the ideal person that they should refer to you. And that it is really as simple as that, because if I'm having three of those conversations a week, in fact, let's make this about you. If you're having three of these a week, right? I mean, I flunk math and I can quickly figure out that's like 150 people a year, probably 150 more than you've spoken to already in your social network. This is how you start making your social network useful. And again, I'm not here to beat you up or be the ever so righteous Uncle Paul. I'm here to tell you that most people completely screw up with their network because they think, yeah, I want to go out and connect with people. Or they think somehow it's like the more you have, the better and everything. And then they do nothing. Think about how many people have invited you to connect with them on LinkedIn. And then you never heard from them again. But even worse yet, you actually did hear from them again the minute they needed something. So what we want to do now is actually change that. So that is the first way. Now, I told you, if you do that just at a rate of three a week, you have 150 more people that you've spoken with. Is it safe to say that even if like you were the world's like shittiest asker of referrals, that like you wouldn't get something out of that? So those 150 people that you speak with would have to be able to give you, on a bad day, some level of referral, certainly more than what you're getting now. So that is one source, social agents in that context, in a social networking type of environment. But don't forget, there's also offline. How about those networking events that you're going to? At the end of that conversation, Ask them, what would a good referral look like for you? Listen to them. Go through the same steps. Care about what they're saying. Clarify so that you really own what it is that they're looking for. When they get done with it, say, oh, by the way, right, as if like you didn't plan this, you're going to say, here's what a good referral would look like for me. So category number one that we miss would be social agents. If you want to translate that into, instead of social agents, just our online and offline network, that'll work too. The second one, I talked about this one last week when I was telling you about the number one sales rep in the company that I worked for. This guy was number one 2 years in a row. And when I asked for his advice, which all of us really should be doing, telling the ego to like wait in the car, and actually, like when we know successful people, asking them how they're getting a result, like that result that we're trying to get, right? So what he told me was that it was very simple what he had been doing for the last 2 years. What he did was he would take every appointment that he went on. Now, these appointments that we were running, these were new business appointments. That's what our team did. We were the new business development team. That's what we did. So we really didn't like have anything to do with like account management or anything else. It was handed off. So what Keith was doing, he said, every appointment that I go on, I asked them for a referral. And I was like, wait a minute, I think like I didn't hear something right here or whatever. You mean to tell me like when you do like a follow-up appointment, right? Like when you go back and make sure they're happy so that, you know, like you don't get a chargeback or something on your commission, and then, you know, you bless the account and like you run and you go to the next account. He goes, no. He goes, like, I'm talking about every appointment. Like, I'm not doing business with them at that point. I asked them for a referral. I'm like, well, how could you ask them for a referral at that point? They haven't done business with you. And he said, and that's what gets in the way of a lot of people asking. He said that, you know, it's not going to be the worst thing that they heard all day. There's nothing nervy about asking them. Simply, you know, who else do you know that might be able to benefit from this type of service? And he said, I haven't been thrown out of any buildings yet for asking that. And, you know, some do, some don't. But, you know, back in those days, we were running like 3 appointments a day. And from those 3 appointments, he said, I'm able to generate, you know, at least on, you know, a bad day, 1 to 2 extra appointments just from those 3 because I asked. So he said, really, if you look at it percentage-wise, I'm almost doubling the opportunities that I have out there. And he goes, that's how I'm doing it. So I have to tell you, I started doing this back in, I guess it was 1996. It was probably 1996, maybe 1997. And at the time that I was doing this, I always tell the story, I was ranked somewhere around 60th out of about 345, 350 sales reps worldwide. Now, I'm not sitting here patting myself on the back, but I could tell you the average sales rep who's pretty damn close to the top 50 of an organization with about 350 sales reps would, you know, many times miss a lesson like that. They would think that, well, I've got it figured out, and eventually, you know, I'm going to get up a little bit closer to the top 20. I seem to be doing good enough. And considering that I got up there very, very quickly, most people, if they had the same experience, would not realize that it's still an opportunity to learn. They wouldn't put on that humble student's cap that I always talk to you guys about. So I will tell you that once I had applied what he had talked about and I had done it for a while, I went from 60th to 12th worldwide. My story ends at 12th because they promoted me to run a region where I was responsible for 150 employees. And, you know, it really was a life-changing move for me. Now, so that's one thing that it's done. And the other day, without being too tacky here, I was trying to think, dollars and cents-wise, what is this bit of advice meant to me and my family? Because I've been utilizing this throughout different sales positions that I've had ever since. Now, not every role that I've had since 1997 have I been in the trenches as the sales rep. I've been in the trenches as a leader, and I've gone out on lots of sales calls with my team. But you know, for the last, 6 years now, 7 years, I've been back in the trenches with my own business. And I can tell you that conservatively, this piece of advice has put a few hundred thousand dollars into my bank account over the last 20 years by simply asking. And just like this rep told me, I've never had anybody say, I can't believe you said that to me. What an awful thing for you to say. You nervy bastard, get out. I've never had it. So I'm telling you, it might be an opportunity for you too. So, you know, what I want to point out here that's really important, and this lesson is one that my dad taught me many, many years ago. Some of you know this, some of you don't, but my first boss was my dad. I worked in a family business. We were selling to the graphic arts industry. And, you know, one day, I mean, my numbers were good. I was also going to college part-time. And back then, for a guy who was going to college, pretty much, actually, I was going to college full-time and kind of working in the family business part-time. But working part-time in the family business, I was able to grow a territory of $1.5 million back then without any help from my dad. I mean, he was very big on not playing favorites or anything like that. So one of the things that I remember so vividly is him coming in to speak with me, and he said to me, you know, I really want to talk to you about your numbers and everything. And, you know, I have to ask you, you know, I'm noticing that this business is coming from you knocking on doors and cold calling and everything else. And but I'm just a little concerned because none of this seems to be coming from referral. And I said, yeah, that's right, because the cold calling's working and the door knocking is working. There, done. Short conversation. What's for lunch, Dad? Right? And he's like, well, no, I think you're missing an opportunity. I mean, you have these accounts, and I know for a fact that they love you, and that, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen you racing out the door to drive from Long Island over to New Jersey to race a sample over to them. You've done things over the weekend, all these kinds of things. I mean, don't you think that some of them would love to refer you? You know, why aren't you asking them? I mean, they don't hate you, you know, and sometimes I talk with them, they're saying really cool things about you and everything. I'm like, well, to be honest with you, I feel weird asking them. I feel like I'm begging them. I feel like, you know, it's just like it makes the conversation weird. Now, I want you to think about what I just said there. Let's kind of step away from the story for a minute. I said that I feel weird. I feel like it makes the conversation get weird. I feel like I am begging them for something. You know, does that at all like sound like you if you're avoiding like asking for referrals? Because I know every time I tell this story, a lot of people say, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. But then my dad said something to me, getting back to the story. And he said, you know, Paul, I think the part that you're missing here is that people actually love to refer other people. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, he goes, no, seriously. He goes, and I forgot the example that he used at the time. It was a long time ago because I know I had hair back then. I don't anymore. But he said something along the lines of, well, do you ever have like one of your friends ask you like a really good, like back then, like a really good bar like to hang out in or like a good restaurant? Because, you know, I had been dating the person who became Mrs. Uncle Paul, by the way, a while back then already. And he said, yeah, any of your friends ever ask you a good restaurant? I said, sure. And he goes, well, how does that make you feel when they think enough of you to ask for your opinion? I said, well, it makes me feel great. He goes, yeah, it kind of makes you feel like you're in the know, right? And I go, yeah, absolutely. And he goes, you know, it kind of makes you feel like a rock star. And this guy was brilliant because he was reeling me in to the point where he's like, there you go. And he said that his philosophy was that all of us like to recommend other people, that we love that feeling that when people ask us if we know someone, and we also love that feeling when we go above and beyond and then we make them look like a rock star to their customers and their friends. And he was spot on right. And I will tell you, that philosophy right there changed the whole trajectory for me for the rest of my selling career. Because once I realized that when we look at things that way, it doesn't have to be a weird conversation. And then I married that in with what this other rep was saying, is that he was asking prospects and not clients, I was like, well, wait a minute. You know, everybody likes to feel good. This doesn't have to be weird. I'm, in a way, yes, I get something out of it, but I'm also giving them an opportunity to feel good at least twice. Number one, when I ask them, like, I appreciate and value their opinion enough to ask, but also when I make them look really good, because I am going to make them really look good. So that's the second place. So far, we have this concept of social agents, which is a fancy way of saying your online and your offline network, people who can amplify your message, get the word out on your behalf, and in a way become sort of like referral partners. Referral partners are different in a way, but in a way they become like your referral partner. The second category, we said, would be prospects, people who are not doing business with you. So every time you have an appointment with a potential client, it doesn't have to be over and over and over again that you do this, but that first time appointment, if it goes well, why not ask them at the end if they know anyone else who could benefit from your widget? That brings us to the third category. This one is going to blow your mind because a lot of us wouldn't even think of this. But I hope when I get done with a few examples that you'll feel differently. This one is crazy. You ready for it? It would be customer complaints. Customer complaints. Customer complaints could be an absolutely like incredible source of referrals and word of mouth advertising for you. So I want to give you two different stories. One of them I beat to death and I probably told you guys a million times. So I'm not going to lead with that one. I want to make it look like I got some fresh material for you guys. The first one happened recently. And out here in New York, man, we have like all these diners. And I love diners, by the way. And I miss them when I go out of state. Just so you guys know, not like you should really give a shit about that, but I want to put that out there in a moment of complete transparency. But the night before a webinar is going to launch for me, it's usually like a Wednesday night, it's just like that is a really long day for me, just so you guys know. And what happens is that it's the day before a webinar is going to launch. So you have all these last-minute sales. In fact, I get a tremendous amount of last-minute business because that's the nature of who I sell to, right? We don't like to really plan things. And boom, spur of the moment, I'll like attend Castain's webinar. So I have all that coming in. Then there's a number of so there's like selling opportunities there. I have people reaching out to me and they're wondering now if maybe instead of attending the webinar, I can customize it and come in and train their team on that or do a webinar that's customized with examples just for them. So I have all that. Then on top of that, I'm just like a perfectionist. I try to be anyway. And I'm revising things with the content that I'm like, you know what? Let me see if I can squeeze in these other ideas or whatever. So I'm doing things with the slides, last minute, some rehearsal and everything. And then there's customer service things that come up. And what's going to happen when you have the amount of people attending the webinars that I do, which on a really like bad webinar, I'll have 450 people attend. But many of the webinars fall in the like 600 to 900 participant range. So when you have that many people, you're going to have different like customer service related questions and even challenges. Like you're going to have people that can't maybe get in with their browser, or maybe they're telling me, hey, I didn't get the information, and I remind them to check the spam filter and everything. But it is a long freaking day. So long that I forget to feed my fat ass. I'm not kidding you. It's like for me to forget to eat at my size is like it's like you guys forgetting to breathe. I can't imagine forgetting to eat, but like I forget to eat that day every time. So my wife works crazy hours. My kids are all in college and they're going to school crazy hours. So there's Uncle Paul like starving, and I don't want to stop and make myself something to eat. I don't even want to go out and leave the damn house to go get something. So what I do is I sweet talk Mrs. Uncle Paul into stopping off at the diner on the way home. So she and her little, you know, she's a good negotiator. So she's like, well, you call it in and I'll go get it. I'm like, all right, no problem. So I call in my damn order. And she goes and picks it up. And like I said, just remember, like I'm like a big cranky pants by the end of the day on Wednesday, man. A lot of shit has gone down, good and bad. It's an emotional roller coaster. I've got a lot of people coming in. I mean, there are some Wednesdays where I sell 150 seats to a webinar. That's huge, especially at $99 a piece. So there I am, just like, you know, just like done. She walks in and like these people forgot the damn French fries. And, you know, I didn't make a big deal about it, but I said, oh, shit, man. It's like, you know, I'm starving here. And this, like, this sandwich is not going to be, like, I need, like, some additional fattening shit to eat. So I pick up the phone, and, you know, my philosophy is I don't think the guy had it on his list of things to do to forget Uncle Paul's French fries. I call up, and I said, hey, not a big deal, but I just, you know, you remember me? I'm the guy I called a little while ago. I ordered this and this. Yeah, sure. It was only, you know, 20 minutes before that or whatever it is. I said, well, you forgot the French fries. You know, I'm going to send my wife up to get it. And he was like all kinds of apologetic. And I think that's the first thing right there, that when we're handling a customer complaint, that you really got to care about the other person. And even if you've heard this complaint a million times, for them, it's like their first time. So you have to care. And this guy cared, and he goes, oh, please, you know, obviously, you know, we're not going to charge you for this. And I'm thinking, of course you're not going to charge me for this, asshole, because, you know, like you charged me for it before and didn't give them to me. But again, I'm not going to get anywhere by being difficult to this guy. Plus, here's a little rule that I live by. Never be nasty to people when they're working with your food, man. All kinds of crazy shit could end up in that food. So anyway, that's just – and that's a free tip, by the way. That wasn't on the agenda today. So my wife comes back with the French fries, and he makes it like an extra big order, and she comes back with a thing full of cookies, a tray full of cookies, which I didn't order, but he was like, and my wife was saying, this guy felt horrible, man. He acted like, you know, like he just did like something horrible to you, like he slapped the shit out of you. And he's like, you know those movies like in The Godfather, remember like Sonny, when he beat the hell out of that, like we call it a Sonny garbage can beating. He beat the hell out of that guy that was messing with the sister and was beating on her. And then I thought it was at the end of it. Didn't he like throw some money down on the ground or something? Unless I'm confusing my like mob movies. I probably am. But anyway, just like let me have the moment, pretend like that was the movie. But you guys know what I mean. But this guy felt horrible. So he sends the damn cookies, the damn, you know, just like supersizes my order of French fries and all that. And the point here is that they really cared. They turned it around. And I have told this story to so many of my friends because I was blown away because, you know, I don't know if it's a New York thing or not, but the average business, they don't give a shit that they, like, messed up your order. I mean, to them, it's just like, what does this guy complain about? It's French fries. And even, like, on a dollar amount, what does he complain about? You know, it's $5. I mean, okay, so, you know, is he going to go bankrupt now because I screwed him out of $5? But he went above and beyond to turn it around. So he got a whole mess of free word of mouth advertising, and I said all kinds of great things or whatever. It solidified my relationship with him. And I will also tell you that there were some people that I was speaking with out here that had been going to other places in the area, and right away they were like, oh, I've been meaning to go there. I didn't know. It always seemed like a nice place. Now I'm going. So I really don't know if that turned into any extra business for this guy yet, but I will tell you that if this were a B2B scenario and that guy turned around to me and said, hey, listen, feel free to say no, but, you know, I'm really happy to hear from you that, you know, you're happy and we were able to turn this around. Is there anyone else that you know that might really, you know, benefit from doing work with us? And I will tell you, in a B2B scenario like that, I would right then and there, if I had to sit down and rack my brain, that guy would get 2 to 3 referrals. And I will tell you, he wouldn't even have to ask me to facilitate that intro. I would do it. I would be, and I'm taking care of this. I am going to reach out to them, and I am going to play matchmaker here because I want to reward the fact that you care about me. So that's the first scenario. The second scenario is the one that I just beat to death all the time, and it's the famous Disney story. Disney is famous for really going above and beyond when it comes to their guests, and especially when things happen even out of their control. Like we've heard the stories of the kid dropping the ice cream on the floor, right? And then it's not Disney's fault, and Disney coming along, getting the kid another ice cream and all that kind of stuff. I experienced that, by the way, and this isn't the story, but just while we're on that tangent, my My son Nick had dropped a slice of pizza on the floor, and they came along and, you know, got him another slice. He didn't have to wait online and all that kind of stuff. So they really are famous for making sure that their guests are just completely delighted. So we had a situation out there, and it's not even a situation. It was an honest mistake that they made. We went to the Polynesian, does this whole like luau thing, right? And, you know, they have all the people out there juggling like torches and all this other kind of stuff. We get there, it is packed. Right. In fact, we had to book this, I think, 3 weeks in advance or something like that to be able to get a seat. So they were booked. Right. It was just wall to wall people. And I don't know about you, but like when I go to a restaurant and it's wall to wall people and everything and they're busy, I know it's going to take a little longer. And I also know that there might be some mistakes and stuff. It's just the way it is. You know, shame on me for going on a busy night. That's how I look at things. There's other things for me to get like more upset about in life. But we go here and they ask for a drink order. My son orders a lemonade. They come back with everybody's drink but my son's. And as like the lady's putting them all down, is there anything else in the meantime, you know, while you're figuring out like what you're going to order? My son, very respectfully, he was like about 12 or 13 at that time. He said, "I'm awfully sorry, but I believe you forgot my lemonade." This waitress was devastated, like on my son's behalf. Like she was feeling his loss, right? Like times 100. Seriously, like you had to see the look on her face. She felt so sad for him. And he wasn't expressing any sadness. He was just like happy as shit to be in Disney with his family at Christmas time on like a 13-day trip that we were to dream vacation. So she was like, "I am so sorry." And she said something along the lines of, "I'm going to get you your lemonade and wait till you see how we fix things when we make mistakes at Disney." And I'm thinking, all right, you know, I don't know. Like, what is she going to do? Well, let me tell you what she did. She comes back with an entire pitcher of lemonade.